Six, session number 29566, Reel 1.
Len Spicer, Reel 1. Can you tell me where and when you were born, please?
Hackney, in London, on the 13th of October 1931.
What did your father and mother do for a living?
My mother was a butcher, and my father was a commercial traveller.
And what was Hackney like when you were growing up?
It was all right. I had a very happy childhood there. We weren't poor, we weren't rich, we were somewhere in the middle. There was always plenty of food on the table. And as far as I can remember, it was quite a happy childhood.
What about school? When did you go to school?
The first school I can really remember was Northwold Road School in Hackney. That was one of these old Victorian buildings. And I think all the kids were dead scared of the masters and mistresses, but that's the way it was in those times, I guess.
And did you like any subjects while you were at school?
Well, we're talking when I was quite young, so really at that time, you know, I wasn't really conscious, if that's the right word, of different things going on. You just went to school and came back again.
And towards the end of the 1930s, were you aware that there was a war brewing at all?
Oh yes, yeah, things started to change. I noticed certainly my mother got very agitated, and I can remember on more than one occasion her saying to my father, you know, what are we going to do? And at that time I think he was rather concerned as well, because he suggested to her that he would like to go into the police force, because at that time they were asking for volunteers to go into the police service. And I always remember a story he told me later. As a young man, he and a very good friend of his, they were both working for the same company, and they both decided to join the police. And so they toddled along to the station and were interviewed, and they said, yes, you're the sort of chaps we're looking for, but we'll let you know. Meanwhile, I think my father said he had, later on, a couple of weeks later, he had an altercation with another gentleman in a car. And my father mostly was a fairly placid chap, but on this occasion, I think he lost his rag a bit and tore this other bloke off a strip. Anyway, he thought no more of it. And later on, the applications that they filled in for the police came through, and they were invited back for a second interview. And lo and behold, who should be conducting the interview for the police force was the bloke that he'd had the altercation with. Needless to say, for some reason that he never quite found out, he didn't get in. So he just continued doing what he was doing.
So when the war came, did he want to become a special constable?
He still wanted to become a special constable, but he didn't have any success. So he was left with the possibility of being called up. Anyway, we had moved then, just at the outbreak of war, we'd moved from Hackney to Dagenham, because he'd been promoted, and he'd taken charge of a shop in Enfield. It was quite a large furniture shop, and sold all sorts of things, so, you know, furniture and fittings and what have you. And he'd held that job down for quite some time, but then the company decided to close it down. But we'd still moved from Hackney to Dagenham, because it was closer for him to go to work. But next door but one to us was an elderly gentleman who had a transport company. And in talking with my father, he offered him a job, initially as a driver. So he took the job, and he gradually progressed through the company until he was more or less this chap's right-hand man, if you like. And I know it sounds rather quick, but it's only a small company, so, you know, progress through the ranks was quite quick. And how it was done, we never found out, but he suddenly had a reserved occupation. So he never went in the services, and he worked for the company all the way through, well, right up until he retired, actually. He did sort of 25, 30 years with them. So, you know, by making that move, he managed to fiddle his way out of the services, if you like.
And do you have any remembrances of the outbreak of war?
Yeah. Things started to get a little bit short. Because, I mean, rationing wasn't bought in yet. But we noticed things like fruit was gradually disappearing from the shelves of the shops. Policemen were wearing tin hats with their gas masks strapped across their back, and you saw lots more soldiers walking around in uniform. Camps have been set up all over the place. I remember once we went to Southend for the day, and that's my first ever recollection of barbed wire. The beaches were being cleared because that was the Cold War period, if you like.
Was it the Phony War?
That was the Phony War, yeah. Sorry, not the Cold War, the Phony War. Yeah, where they told us, the government told us, everything was going to happen, and nothing actually did for quite a few months. Everything was quiet, you know. There were people digging ditches and putting Anderson shelters in their gardens, and the sandbags were going up all over the place, but nothing happened. It was quiet.
Had you been issued with a gas mask?
Yes, I remember being issued with a gas mask. And my brother had a tiny brother. He had a Mickey Mouse gas mask.
Could you explain what that was?
Oh, the Mickey Mouse gas mask. Yeah, everybody knows, or I think, hopefully everybody knows who Mickey Mouse is. They modelled the Mickey Mouse gas mask on Mickey Mouse. He had large black ears and a rubber nose, and every time you breathed in and out, the nose used to flap up and down. It was a wonderful thing, and it had two large apertures for the eyes, and there was, you know, you could see the eyes behind it, and they were sort of magnified. It was a wonderful thing, and it had a big pipe that came out the mouthpiece, and it was quite, I suppose you could say it was frightening to a kid, but once they got used to it, it was quite a joke, really.
How were you given instructions about how to wear the gas mask? Did somebody show you?
Well, initially the people that issued the gas masks told our parents how to go about using them, and they in turn explained to us. We didn't take to them very quickly, or, you know, very... what's the word I want? We weren't very fond of them, because as you put them on, there was this awful smell of rubber that you used to get. But once you got the thing on, you know, you had to tighten the straps and put it on so that it clipped round your face, so there wasn't any possibility of any air getting in. But they were a bit claustrophobic, very claustrophobic for a kid.
And how did you carry them about, and did you have to carry them out all
the
time?
Yeah, you had to carry your gas mask everywhere you went. It was issued to you in a cardboard box, a little cardboard box, I guess, about 8 by 5 square on a length of string, and you used to either carry it over your shoulder or sling it across your back. And when you went to school, you carried your gas mask, you brought it home, everywhere you went. You didn't go anywhere without your gas mask.
And were there any sort of preparations you made for war in the family home? I'm thinking about blackout.
That was the other thing. The government brought in the blackout order, and everybody had to scout around markets and shops looking for black material to cover the windows. This was done in all sorts of shapes and forms, and my father made wooden frames for the windows and tacked black material all over the frame so they clipped in. And just before that was brought in, we were issued with what I can only describe these days as a type of masking tape. And this used to go across all your windows in case the wind, when the windows was blowing, it were blown in, glass didn't scatter everywhere. The tape held it more or less in one piece. So that was quite interesting. Blackouts were a bit of fun, really, because they were supposed to be. The idea was to cut out every drop of light, but you used to get the police and the air raid wardens coming along outside and saying, yelling out at the top of their voice, "Turn that light out, missus." Or they used to get a bang on the window, and you used to have to go out with the warden or the police officer, and he'd point out exactly where the light was coming from under a crack, and you had to completely cover the whole thing up. But it was exciting as a kid.
And did you have access to a shelter?
Yes, we did. The local council delivered an Anderson shelter to every house on the estate. This came in compartments, all separate, with big bag of nuts and bolts, and you were told to bury this thing in the garden. So my father had to, he was a very keen gardener, but he had to dig up the bottom part of the garden, and I think he dug out a massive great big hole. He went down at least 6 to 8 foot, nearly broke his back, and then you bolted this thing together and slid it into place, and then all the earth you took out the hole you piled on top of the Anderson shell. It was a corrugated metal affair, and then they issued you with sandbags. You filled sandbags and you put it all around the front. He built a brick blast wall in front of the opening, covered that. We had electric light down there. He laid a line from the house. He got some, well, I think he pinched actually, some conduit piping, and he laid a line from the house right the way down to the shelter, so we had electric light. We had emergency lighting in the form of candles. We kept candles down there in a box. We kept matches. We kept drinking water, biscuits, a shovel, a stirrup pump, which was issued also. That was for putting out incendiary bombs. It was like a bicycle pump thing. You use like a bicycle pump. You put one lead into a bucket of water, and the other end was a hose, and that was supposed to act as a quick method of putting out incendiary bombs. It did work sometimes, but they were quite fierce, and it wouldn't be a good idea to tackle water.
Had there ever been a question of you being evacuated?
That did arise early on, but my mother had a favourite saying. She said, "If we go, we all go together."
Do you have any memories of the start of the kind of German air attacks on the London area?
Yeah, living in Dagenham, we were fairly close to the Ford and Briggs Body Works. During the war, they went over to tank manufacture and engines for tanks. And their furnaces used to be on 24 hours a day. They never shut their furnaces down. So So consequently, if they opened their furnaces to release the vapour, the whole sky lit up, which was a bit of a giveaway, really. And the Germans did cotton onto this a bit, and they bombed that area quite heavily. But the area itself was bombed fairly extensively, but we used to see them go over wave after wave onto London, Poplar, and the East End, and the whole sky used to be lit up at night.
And you said that the area around Dagenham, did that receive a number of
that got fairly heavy bombing? Yeah. It was nothing to be dragged out of bed early on in the morning and straight down the shelter. We got into a routine. We went straight down the shelter and we didn't even go to bed in the house. But I used to persuade my father to come out the shelter just to look up, and you could see searchlights all over the place, and you could actually see the formations of German bombers coming over. And it was, as I say, for a kid, it was wonderful. But obviously, if you were a parent, you were afraid for your family. But it was a very exciting time.
Could you hear the sound of anti-aircraft guns?
Oh yeah, anti-aircraft guns, night fighters occasionally, but not very often. But more often than not, it was searchlights and anti-aircraft fire was quite horrendous, and you could hear the bombs coming down as well. It was frightening, but it was exhilarating at the same time.
How near did the bombs fall to the family home?
We had a number of bombs hit a small what we used to call a banjo, which was a turning you couldn't get out of, which was about, I don't know, 150 yards just up off of the turning we lived in. It wiped out about three or four houses completely, but they dotted all around us, but that was the closest we ever came. I remember one morning though, my father had gone to work. He used to go fairly early. And then the next thing I remember, my mother came into my brother and myself. We used to sleep in the same bedroom. She grabbed us and almost yanked us down the stairs. And we got down the stairs and we had about three steps to go. And the front door of the house just blew in on us. And you couldn't see anything outside. It was just like a thick mist, and there were chicken feathers flying about all over the place, and we dived from the stairs into the sitting room into about 6 inches of soot, where the soot had just been blown straight down the chimney. And what happened was, she had got up and she'd looked out the window and she'd seen a German bomber, rooftop level, just whizzing down the street, and he was just machine gunning everything. And that's when she decided to grab the pair of us and hike us downstairs. And afterwards, when we recovered and, you know, I got dressed, we went up the road and there was three or four houses taken out completely. And all the railings were bent where the machine gun bullets had hit the railings and gone through.
With the bombing occurring, did it affect your education at all?
Yeah, unfortunately it did. I would say that from the age of about 10 until I left, well, no, not left school, but I had 6 years where I didn't really learn anything, because although I think the idea was for teachers to still teach when we went to the shelter at school, for some unknown reason we had teachers that either didn't want to teach you or they weren't really interested. Consequently, we found that every time, and don't forget this is going on all day, every day, so you would be in the shelter probably more hours than you would normally be. If you went to school at, say, 8:45, the air raid warning might go, and, you know, it'd be down the shelter, everybody. And the sooner you got down into the shelter, there were a big pile of comics. And the teacher said, grab a comic, read, shut up, or amuse yourself. So, therefore, we were never taught anything while we were down the shelter. And you might be down there a couple of hours, then you'd come up again. You might be up 15 minutes, and the warning would go again, and down you went again. Or you might be up for an hour, and you'd start a lesson, and then the warning would go again, and down you'd go again. And the same thing would happen. Grab a comic, be quiet. And this is how it went. And I lost, I would say, 6 years, virtually, of learning. So when I left school at 14, am I going on to, when I left school at 14, I left with no qualification. I didn't know anything really, other than a times table and how to spell, and that was it.
What kind of things did you get up to as a youngster, you know, were you, when you in your spare time?
We used to go conquering. We used to play knockdown ginger. We used to annoy neighbours. Oh, all sorts of things we used to get up to. We never really thought that elderly people were any different from us. We used to take the mickey out of them. We used to walk behind them and pull peculiar faces. Which, on reflection, was a bit unfair, really, because the older you get yourself, you realise what a silly thing it was to have done.
Did you collect shrapnel or things?
Oh, yes, shrapnel was a wonderful thing. My mother used to say, you're not going out, or be careful. We used to go along the road and pick up shrapnel, although we were a bit silly, really, because there were plenty of announcements given over the radio, or as in those days it was referred to as the wireless, not to pick anything up, because the Germans started dropping what they called anti-personnel bombs, and these were in all sorts of shapes and sizes. They had miniature butterfly bombs, things that you could pick up and shake and then it would blow your hand off, and all sorts of things. But for some unknown reason, we just didn't seem to take any notice of this. If we saw something jagged and shiny, and it was even better if it had a bit of a swastika on, that was a major coup, you know. But, yeah, I had a fairly extensive collection of shrapnel at the end of the war.
What about rationing?
Rationing. Now, that was wonderful. The government issued every family with ration books. You had a ration book for every member of the family. I can't actually remember the amounts you got, but it wasn't very much. And your mother used to eke out the coupons. You used to coupon for everything: meat, butter, sugar, margarine, butter, all that sort of thing. And the old shopkeeper used to tick it off as you got the family ration. But she did very well. She eked out the food, and we didn't go hungry. It was a staple diet, but you didn't go hungry. But it just about was enough to keep you, you know, going. My father, I think he had a connection, or as most families did, they used to buy stuff on what was called the black market. These gentlemen, who at the time were known as spivs, used to come round and, would you like this, missus, and would you like that, missus? They could, if you got the money, they could get anything. So most families, you know, dealt.
Were there any other ways of supplementing the rations?
My father turned his garden over to vegetables. He got rid of all his flowers and he started growing everything imaginable. There was always hints from the Department of Food and Agriculture. They used to give you talks on how to grow vegetables, when to plant them, and then as soon as that crop had finished, plant another crop. So you had a fairly good rotation of crops. Also, my father started keeping rabbits. You could keep rabbits, you could keep chickens. We never kept chickens, but we kept rabbits, which we used to fatten up for Christmas, and that used to supplement the meat ration, which was fairly meagre at the time.
And as a child, did you have access to sweets or
very chocolate? Very few sweets as a kid. Certainly when the war started, they just seemed to drop off. And fruit was another thing that completely disappeared. So fruit and sweets throughout the war, didn't see any.
You mentioned listening to the radio. What type of family activities did you do around the radio?
There were programmes that were favourites. Things like Tommy Handley, Itmar, a lot of the old-time music hall artists that were still knocking around at that time. They gave quite good value for money. We had an old accumulator set, which was a battery type thing. We had two batteries, and they had to be topped up. We used them in rotation. They had to be topped up at the local radio shop. my father would connect this thing up to the battery and it would work while the other battery was in the shop. And then when that battery ran out, I used to have to toddle up and put that one went on charge and bring the other one back. And then the radio was okay again for a little while. We didn't have an electric radio.
Did you listen to sort of war bulletins as well?
War bulletins, yeah. There was lots of information coming from the food ministry. Mr. Churchill, of course, who at that time was Prime Minister, his speeches were fantastic. And even to this day, I've got his full collection of wartime speeches, which were very, very inspiring. Excellent.
Did people listen to Lord Harhor at all?
Yeah, I think they did. A lot of people didn't listen to him. They thought he was a complete nutter and a traitor and just wouldn't give him any room. But he was interesting to listen to. I mean, I've got some recordings now, which I listen to occasionally.
You mentioned that there were lots of more troops about. Were there any stationed in the sort of Dagenham area?
There were the local TA units seemed to expand. There were a lot more men joining the TA, and subsequently they became regular soldiers. But out at a place called Haynock, which was about 15 miles away from us, they started to prepare camps for training troops and that sort of thing. And eventually, I think the Americans, when they joined in, they came over and took over the camps, and also they converted part of them to POW camps. There was a lot of Italians and a German camp further up the road. We used to see them when we used to go and collect conkers. And they used to wave to us, and they used to give us sweets and things, which was quite nice. We never considered them sort of nasty blokes, you know. they all seemed all right to us.